like to first thank everyone on the panel. And Brenda, especially your experience really resonated with me as I realized that I've spent about half of my adult life living in other countries. I know that there are quite a few people who have had that experience. And as an almost a nomadic person, there are particular challenges and questions that arise in developing a land ethic. Do you have to have one land that fosters that deep relationship? Because it takes a lot of time to make that relationship. As well at our table, we were discussing those people who live in, you know, really enclosed, highly urbanized areas, and how, I guess what I'm asking the panel is how you see or how you would encourage those people to foster that thought process that is needed, that feeling process that is needed to embody a rich land ethic.
It's interesting. I mean, you touched on that nomadic piece, and as I was driving here this morning, I was thinking about that having lived in these different places, and there was always a sense, for me at least, that something was missing, or that it was, you know, even I lived in countries where English was pretty much native. So it wasn't a verbal language, but there was still an unrootedness, right? That even though I'd been gone from Canada and Alberta and the prairie for so long, and even when I was here, that I didn't actually really appreciate it. I'm the least likely farmer or prairie girl in my family. It was home as soon as I came, and then I was able to then act from this place. But I know many others, and I have many friends who have been able to find that rootedness and actually found that sense of soul and spirit that I hear the other panelists even talk about from their true lands, the lands that make them smile, in other places where it's like maybe in a past life. We use that kind of terminology, that this is where I was from. So I don't want to give discouragement. I guess for me it was that sense of just a rootedness, and that there's an unspoken language that is there for me, with the people and this land. But I think it is something that, and that's where I guess I really enjoyed, and for me it was really important in my own journey, the work of Arnides, because he's talking about an ecosophy where it's an inward looking to even understand your own deep motivation and deep norms that isn't about a specific place. It's as much your relationship to any and to any land and all the lands. And I think that for people who truly develop a sense of place, it's the place that starts with wherever you're at. And for me, the turtle was actually a big, powerful totem for me. Even before I started traveling, I had that compulsion because it has its home wherever it is, but it also knows its identity very well to then be home. So I do believe in any place and anywhere you can start and you can develop it, because so much of it is we're humans and we co-evolve. We're part of this ecology and we're part of this world. You know, there's the ecosystems, right, from the smallest to the greatest, and it's all embedded. That I do believe that by even looking within, we can start to then find the relationship to that which is around us, regardless of what it is. You know, we're in great abundance because we get to take off our shoes and go walk our land, feel it and touch it more than others. But I don't think one should feel that it's impossible because they don't have the joy of a farm or a specific land that they yet feel has those roots.
Just recently, since I don't know more, began been invited to different countries. It's the first international travel I've ever done, was to London, England, and then to Germany, and then to Switzerland. But everywhere that I went, I always took teachings of my people, and I'll say this in my language, and then I'll translate it. But one of the teachings begins with, Ayi suma kayas, mstam si mantu pusan, imatsu si tanawaski, msui skami suti, ayam, ikiyat, kamau sakunah isa, utir kiwayan, asniya, aski, kamau sakunah utsihce, yapsihta, yusi, tatumi, waski, ibu psui pihta wahdiwai, Here we support the estate wanta aski. When the Creator first made the earth, the Creator traveled the universe and gathered all the material from the universe and brought them together. The Creator made the earth with these materials, and from the universe there's this sound, and that sound goes, no memory, no human memory can recall when this sound began, but the Creator took that sound and put it in the center of the earth, and that became the heartbeat of Mother Earth. And then after that heartbeat was created, the Creator blew air into the earth, and it became the air that we breathe. So wherever I go, I'm reminded that when I look at the stars, it's those same stars that my people look at since time immemorial. It's those same stars that my ancestors looked up on, and it's the same air that I breathe, that they were breathing. So it doesn't matter where I am, anywhere in this world. It's the same soil, and it's the same heartbeat, and it's the same air. So whenever I touch the earth in Sweden, in Germany, in London, it's still the same mother, and it's still the same air. And I tell my children, wherever I am, when you look up at the stars, it's the same stars that I'm looking at. There are other teachings as well that I can't really talk about right now, but it's because of those teachings that I am taught that wherever I go, I'm related to all humanity. And it's because of that soul, the soul flame that's given to every person, regardless if they're indigenous or non-indigenous.
Thank you, and thank you. It's so lovely here for everyone. We have a second question for our panelists, and so we will have each of them address us one more time. And the question is, how can we extend the vision of a community land ethic to include more and more and more, and to continue deepening our own understanding of it? So Brenda, would you begin? How can we extend the vision of a community land ethic to include more and more, and continue to deepen our own understandings of it? It's similar to what I mean.
When I read this question, I'm not a big fan of being an historian, but I'll take this one, and that I want to be a conversationalist, and that we're always in conversation with each other, with the land, the animals, and with ourselves. And that's very important, because if we're going to build a community land ethic, we need to hear from each other, and we need to really listen to each other as well, and not only just to respond, but to really listen, to understand. And I loved this idea of the uncommon ground that was brought up this morning, because that's where those tensions lie that we need to lean into together, to understand, are they truly uncommon? But if we really start to fly down to the deeper whys, perhaps what looks like two different values, if we really dig down deeper into what's motivating us, what's inspiring us, and why that matters to us, perhaps there is some common ground there. But also because sometimes in that uncommon ground, that's where the creativity lies. In some of the food security work that I do, in food sovereignty work, we started out with a value of equity. And that typically in the world work of food security is about the consumer. It's about assume the person who can't afford or doesn't have access to food. There was a few of us who were coming, and I read that word and the name that we're looking at from a consumer. It was also the ability to make a fair living and to live an inspired life as well while providing food. And yet sometimes the solutions that we're coming up to in the day-to-day food security work seem to be a compromise. Either we're charging too much as producers and therefore people have access to food, healthy, local grown food, or you just have to pay more so that I can have a family life and not have a job to have the ability to grow your food. But unless we lean into that common ground together, and not talk about solutions for other people, but just talk about solutions between the two of us, we won't probably find real solutions. And we won't know the solutions until we sit down together and be surprised, and be willing to be surprised as to what that actually looks like. So the idea of even this morning of what does it mean to be uncolonialized, decolonialized. Maybe we don't have the image, but probably we need restricted. That's the first place we go. But let's have the conversation. So I think, to me, it always starts to come back to what are the questions we ask of each other, and then how do we really listen and respond and work together to find answers. And some of that's going to have to be some letting go, certain things we believe to be true. In nature, if we look at how does growth happen, how does life come again? There looks to be an awful lot of deaths. It's an awful lot of letting go. We're going into winter. It's a big period of letting go, so more can come in the spring. And that's it's an action that I found myself instinctively doing a lot more when I even look at my own practices. You know, if I want to receive, I need to have open hands. If you want to have a new land ethic, maybe we also have to look at what are some of those deep-seated beliefs that we don't even realize we have, like go of. And again, I think we teach each other and we discover those in conversation with each other, with ourselves.